hoping you've been able to print out the two plan finders on pages 8, 9, and 10 in the presentation PDF so that you can see more clearly what I'm talking about and be able to make notes on them. I want to mention right up front that these plan finders are for people who do not have retiree plans or other kinds of coverage like the VA or TRICARE. They reach 65, they retire, and they're on their own. If you do have those kinds of coverage, you may be fine with them and carry on in that system, but you should know that sometimes those retiree plans are not so good. They may be incomplete, like they don't include drug coverage. And of course, you may want to check what else is out there in the private insurance world. Also, I find that a familiarity with the way this works doesn't hurt. I know with the New York City retiree plans, there's more than one of them out there we can choose from. Some of these look like the a la carte situation, and some of them look more like that complete dinner menu. If you learn what's going on here, it'll be easier for you to understand what's going on with what you've been offered by your employer. I'm going to start now with the Medigaps in the left-hand side of the chart on page 7, under the Part A, Part B boxes at the top. You know, the supplements. To be sure, you don't have to buy a Medigap. You can stick with original Medicare Part A and B and absorb all the extra costs out of pocket. But one always has to ask the question, what if? Especially in this day and age with soaring costs. So getting a Medigap, if you remain on this a la carte side, is pretty important. The way this works is shown in the chart from the Medicare Rights Center. The MRC produces a huge number of educational resources in their Medicare Interactive program. They're on the web. A similar chart can be found on page 76 in this year's Medicare and You book, but I like the MRC's better. At the top of this chart, you'll see 10 headings labeled A, B, C, etc., right through N. These are not to be confused, though, with parts A, B, and D of Medicare. We've been talking about those up till now. These new ones, this set of 10, are Medigap plans. They were designed federally and are regulated by both federal and state laws. Down the left-hand side of the page are the various kinds of extra costs you'll run into with original Medicare. Starting at the top, there's the hospital copays. Below that is the 20% coinsurance in Part B, then the B and A deductibles, the copays for skilled nursing facilities, and so on. The dots in the boxes show that a particular plan in that column does in fact cover that particular item. If a box is blank, you'll be paying for that yourself. At this point, I usually ask people, which is the most comprehensive plan? And pretty quickly, people will shout out F, and that's right. But if you're turning 65 after January 1st of 2020, you won't be able to get that plan anymore. It's only available to the people who reach 65 before January 2020. Same with C, no longer available to the young'uns. So the next question is, which is the most comprehensive plan after F? And the answer is, of course, G. What's missing is that Part B deductible. Congress has decided in recent legislation that they want everyone to have skin in the game, so everybody has to pay that deductible out of pocket. Personally, I believe we already have a lot of skin in the game in this business, so I'm not sure I buy into that idea completely. In any case, G is the way to go if you want the most comprehensive coverage. And also, if you want the most expensive coverage. Now, some people love to feel that they'll never see a bill. It's worth it to them to just buy the most comprehensive plan out there and save themselves any anxiety. Others don't want that expense, and some just can't afford these big plans. So they look at this chart and the reverse side, we'll talk about that in a minute, to see some other viable options. But sticking on this side a bit longer, I'd like you to look at N. It's missing a few things, of course. It doesn't cover the Part B deductible, and it doesn't cover any excess charges a non-participating doctor may want to charge you. In New York State, that's the 5%, if you remember. You'll be paying up to $20 for each office visit. That's the doctor's fee, not any of the lab work or x-rays you may have had while you were there or that he may want you to get in the future, as well as $50 for the ER if you need to go there. You may want to take a chance with this cheaper N. That $20 copay I just mentioned, or whatever smaller amount the office charges, doesn't count towards the deductible. Let me add here that the excess charges talked about in Plan N are not the same as facility fees. Facility fees are those surcharges that are applied when the provider's office is connected with a hospital. One more thing to look at is the footnote at the bottom, which talks about a high deductible F or a high deductible G plan. That means in 2025, you pay $2,870 out of pocket for whatever Medicare Parts A and B doesn't pay for before the plan starts covering these extra costs. The price of these high deductible premiums is way down, as we'll see in a minute. Now go to slide 2 of this PDF, and here's a chart I got on New York State's Department of Taxation and Finance website at the link there on the top of the page. It's updated month by month, but I'm working from what showed up in their chart on July 1st, 2025, which sometimes doesn't change much from the month before. The New York State website is very hard to find. It's buried deep in the department's web pages, but it's definitely the one to use for the New York State Medigap plans. You'll enter your zip code in the box, and I've used Ardsley, but the prices will be the same for anywhere in Westchester, or New York City for that matter. If you enter a Putnam County zip code, expect some different results. It turns out that on July 1st of 2025, there were still 8 insurance companies offering various kinds of Medigaps for our Westchester zip codes. Let's start with Plan F. Look down the column and see which is the cheapest of these. It's at the bottom, United Healthcare's Plan F at $394 a month. That's per person. If there's two of you, you'll be paying two separate premiums, either for the same plan or for any of the other ones, or even for something under the complete dinner menu that I mentioned before. You and your husband or wife are in this situation forever disentangled from one another, unlike in taxes, where you can do a single tax return as married filing joint. The cheapest Plan G, on the other hand, is United Healthcare's at $326.75 a month. Plan G is the same as Plan F, except it doesn't pick up the $257 deductible for 2025. It turns out with Plan G being roughly $67 cheaper a month than Plan F, you start off saving about $807 a year. The annual F is $4,728 minus the annual G at $3,921. And that gives you the $807 difference. But there's still some more math to do because you'll probably have to go to the doctor at some point this year, which will account for some or all of that $257 deductible. So if you subtract that $257 from your $807 savings, you really get a yearly savings of $550 with Plan G. And in some years, you might not go to the doctor much at all and could save even more. So with Plan G, you get close to seeing no bills as you can. If you're a little older and you have the option of choosing either the F or the G, go for the cheapest, as it works out the same. I usually then ask people, why is there such a difference in the pricing for a specific plan? I mean, the most expensive G is roughly $826 a month, and we've been talking about the cheapest one at $327. Is that expensive one better? At $9,912 a year? And for a couple, multiply that by two, it's almost $20,000. Well, the quick answer is no. These plans all must cover what they say they're going to cover. You don't deal with them. You've shown your insurance cards to the doctor or to the facility. They bill Medicare, and Medicare sends it on to the Medigap for the rest of the payment. Expect to be billed just for what you knew you were going to be billed for. In fact, I must tell you that I called Medicare a while back to ask them, is there any reason whatsoever why I can't tell people to go for the cheapest plan in a particular category? And they thought about it for a minute and said, well, can't think of any. And in another instance, an insurance guy was listening to my lecture, and when I asked him at the end if anything I said was different than what he's telling people, he said, yes, one thing. He can't say, choose the cheapest one. And that's obviously because he's out to sell plans. So I'm telling you, go for the cheapest until we hear otherwise and have to revise this whole section of audio. My guess is that why some of these are hugely expensive compared to others is that people are not getting the appropriate advice and just retain what they've always had. Because as long as you pay your premiums, these Medigaps are not going to be canceled. But there's two other ways to save some money that you might want to look into. First, let's look at Plan N. Again, you can do the math later, but the cheapest one, again UnitedHealthcare, is $262.25, which comes to $3,147 a year. And that works out at $774 a year cheaper than the G. But of course, not everything is covered with the N. For the sake of argument, let's say you have to see the doctor 10 times a year. Since it's $20 each office visit, though it could be much, much less, that's the maximum copay the office can charge, and maybe some doctors don't charge any copay at all. Let's take off $200, 20 times 10, from that $774 difference. That leaves you $574 cheaper per year than the full price G. Of course, I'm not taking into account any ER visits or any excess charges. That's the 15% or 5% extra I mentioned before. $574 is a good savings for some people, and the risk to them is worth it. If they don't have to go to the emergency room often, which is only $50 anyway, and don't come down with something that needs a lot more doctor visits than they had expected, they're going to save quite a bit of money. And even if they had seen the doctor 20 times, N would still come out cheaper than G. By the way, that $20 copay starts after the deductible has been met. These copays don't count towards the deductible. And the last things on this chart that you might want to consider are the high deductible F and G plans. If you're having trouble finding these in the chart, they're under the columns called Plan HDF and Plan HDG, with the star at the top of the column. Looking down the high deductible G column, Emblem Health has a plan for $67.69 a month, and that comes roughly to $812 a year for the premium. And that is, as you can see, a lot cheaper than the thousands you'd be paying for the energy. So if you're basically a well senior and you don't go to the doctor too much, you can save a lot of money with this plan. But even if you do get sick and need a lot of care, just know that you'll be paying that first $2,870 out of your own pocket before the G takes over. Medicare pays the doctor what they're owed and contacts the Medigap to take care of the rest. The Medigap will not pay the doctor any amounts until the deductible is met, and during that time, you'd be checking your monthly notices to see where you lie in that deductible phase. And of course, you can expect bills from the doctor during this period. I'm told this billing process can take 1 to 3 months, but once the deductible is met, the Medigap will start paying the doctors the remainder of their fees. Premiums can change in the middle of the year. The increase would be for the people already in the plan and for people starting the plan that month. Usually, you're notified of the price changes beforehand. Someone asked recently whether you can use a Medigap to supplement a retiree plan. The MRC wrote me that the retiree plans are not considered actual Medicare supplements, and therefore, the anti-duplication rules are not being violated if you have both of them. Of course, if the retiree plan was an Advantage plan, then Medigap could not pay secondary to those claims, so you wouldn't want to have both in that case. You can put this chart aside for a moment, but we're going to look at it again later when we take a closer look at this year's costs in Original Medicare. Coming back to the chart on page 7 of the presentation PDF, we still have to get a Part D plan for drugs, this a la carte side, and look into the Medicare Advantage plans on the complete dinner menu on the other side as well. For both of these, we recommend using the Plan Finder on Medicare's website, which you can play with from now till the cows come home if you want to. It's at medicare.gov. Just find that button that says Find Plans Now, and you're good to go. I put together an instruction sheet for it, and the one you see on page 10 of the presentation PDF is my current version. When it's close to the end of the year, The website has been giving people a choice to look at the plans for the current year, as well as the plans coming down on January 1st. So make sure you're in the right place before you start the search. Now they've tweaked this online plan finder over the years based on some of the criticisms they were getting on the design, so I can't guarantee that for too much longer my instructions will totally match, but they're pretty close. I won't go over this instruction sheet point by point at this time. I'm sure you'll find your way, but I will highlight a few things. You'll have to decide right up front whether you want to use this plan finder anonymously or set up an actual account. The main difference is that going in as a guest means that some of your Medicare history won't be carried into the plan finder or retained afterwards. That includes the very important drug list that you'll need to create to get the most accurate pricing in the plans. So if you play with this as a guest, just know that none of your input will be retained. There's arguments for both. If you go in as a guest, you're not telling the big bad web anything much about yourself. Your zip code, for sure, the software needs that because the plans are restricted to specific locations. You'd also be telling them whether or not you're enrolled in a government help program like Medicaid or Extra Help. But the downside is, as I said before, they don't retain anything for a future visit. You'll have to do your drug list, you'll have to do this whole thing again. I tried it both ways, first anonymously. They ask you to select whether you're looking for a standalone D plan, an Advantage plan with drugs included, or an Advantage plan without those drugs. Just follows these initial prompts. They're pretty self-explanatory. I was asked if I want to add my current drugs, and of course I do, because that matters very much to the cost of the Part D plans and the Medicare Advantage with drugs included. If you say you don't want to enter drugs at this time, it will only include the cost of the premiums. We tell people to grab all their little bottles of medicine, line them up at the computer, and just keep entering them in, giving the name of the drug, the dosage, the quantity, the frequency. Choose the pharmacies you pick them up from and decide whether to include mail order as well. As I said before, you'll lose all this information when you close the browser and have to re-enter it if you go back in later. But then again, you may have new medicines by then, or you may have discontinued some of the ones you're including now, or even have to change the dosages. Give them now your preferences for the pharmacy and whether or not you want mail order. When you're done with that, the software will show you a list of plans available to you at your zip code, each with a brief basic description like its monthly premium or any deductibles, the copays for primary docs and the specialists, any extra benefits like some minor vision, hearing, and dental services, fitness programs, acupuncture, and the like. Also, the out-of-pocket maximum for the year. There's a drop-down menu now with the four ways to put this list in different orders. It defaults to lowest drug and premium cost together, but there are other options as well. Down below, clicking the button labeled Plan Details under each one of those overviews or any of the underlined links in the brief description of each plan, these all open up new web pages with a lot more information. I've put some samples of these expansions on page 2 of the handout. And once you're there, clicking back to search results at the top gets you back to that first big list, the one with the brief descriptions, where you can do the same kind of deeper look into any of the other ones they list for you. The description also tells you what kind of Advantage plan it actually is. The most common are the HMOs and the PPOs, and the PPOs now in the country are becoming the most popular of all. The HMO is short for Health Maintenance Organization, and it's generally the cheapest kind, but they're also the most restrictive. You have to stay within a network of providers and facilities in order to be covered, and you'll need a referral from your primary before you go to a specialist. By the way, gynecologists are considered primary doctors. You don't need a referral for them. With the PPOs, or Preferred Provider Organizations, you don't need a referral. And the network is generally much wider, even nationwide. Your costs will be lower if you use their in-network providers, but you can go out-of-network as well. You'll see two out-of-pocket maximums, or what they call MOOPs, maximum out-of-pocket limits. One if you stay with in-network doctors, and the other if you've seen both in and out of network ones. The plans keep track of your costs resulting from in-network use and from a combined in- and out-of-network use. You wouldn't have to pay anything after you've reached these limits. The plan handles the costs for the rest of the year. Some plans may also apply as supplemental benefits like vision services to that out-of-pocket limit. There's some other kinds of Advantage plans as well, but I'm not going to go into those for now. You can check them out in the Medicare and You handbook. A word about health deductibles in some Advantage plans. These plans don't use the Part B deductible that you see in traditional Medicare, but a few of them do have a health deductible of their own. Where there is one, the plan and the provider negotiate pricing and come up with what would be considered the full price for each service. These prices are not necessarily the same as full prices that an uninsured person would pay. Once these full price services reach the health deductible price point, you'd only have to pay the co-pays for the rest of the year. The Department of Senior Programs and Services suggests calling the plan itself to see if you can get more details out of them. A plan's drug deductible works the same way, except in this case, you can see the tiers and the cost-sharing prices right away in the plan finders. On this same brief description page, you can click the box inside the description called Add to Compare. I clicked the first three to see what happens. The next screen lays them out, the ones I chose, side by side for easier comparison, and you can print these out from the print icon up at the top. Not bad at all. I then took a moment to see what happens if I go in by logging into the account that I set up with them last year. The first page, now logged in, shows when I started my Medicare coverage and that I'm not enrolled in any government help. When I click that I do want to add drugs, the next screen shows all the drugs I had entered before, with their information. If you're logging in for the first time, the software shows you your prescription drug claim history for the past year. Select the drugs you want to keep and add others if you'd like. There'll be opportunities to make changes to this drug list on later screens, but the final version in this session will be saved when you log out. And then when you log in next time, the software will bring up this list, but will once again allow you to access that claim history by clicking a link to it. Whether you're looking for a standalone Part D plan or a full Advantage plan with drugs included, there are a ton of details you can get from the plan finder. Let me mention a few drug restrictions that might pop up. These are what's called utilization management restrictions, in quotes, and they can be applied to any drug in the company's formulary and can change from year to year. The most common one is quantity. They only let you get a certain number of pills within a certain period of time, like up to 3 months. Another is prior authorization, where the pharmacist might not give you a drug you've got a prescription for until he contacts the doctor or the plan and gets another level of permission before he's allowed to fill it. This back and forth might take days, actually, as I'm told doctors don't like doing these and they pile up. It happened to me with a simple muscle relaxer. If I wanted relief immediately, I had to buy it outside the plan or just take some aspirin. And the last one is step therapy, and this means the plan will want you to try a lower tier drug first, like a generic, before they give you a brand name. These are cheaper, of course. If the doctor insists on the more expensive brand name and is willing to do some extra communicating with the plan or pharmacy, I've been told you can actually get a higher tiered drug at the lower tier cost. The doctors would be asking for a tiering exception. The most expensive tier is the specialty drugs. Let me give you a warning here. The steps, or tiers, are not standardized. The companies do their own. Last time I checked, some have 4 tiers, some 6, and you'll find the same drug can be classified in a different tier from one company to another. You may wonder why employer drug plans are usually more expensive than the ones in the open market. An Aetna rep explained to me that most retiree plans have open formularies, which give their members the broadest access to drugs. All drugs on their approved list, regardless of tier, are covered. Market plans, though, often choose to have closed formularies, where they limit access to certain brand name or high-tier drugs. They may even only cover generics in some cases. Employers who use closed formularies may be tailoring their drug list to match the needs of their employees. Closed formularies are definitely cheaper for employers than open ones. Now, if a person needs one of the eliminated drugs, they could perhaps work with their doctor to get a formulary exception. What is clearly missing is they don't mention the plan I'm currently on. It's a retiree plan, and it's not listed here. So the plan finder is only giving me the choices available to me if I were to drop my retiree coverage, something a lot of us are totally unwilling to do. The rest seems all the same as going in anonymously, but I only work with this for half an hour. There may be some other differences in the results. As a result of the Inflation Reduction Act's changes in drug pricing, plans that have zero or low-cost premiums might be cutting corners in other ways. So if price is really an issue for you, it's important to shop around during fall enrollment. That's October 15th to December 7th every year. Even when the premium stays the same, at zero, for example, the plan may change its formulary, or it may raise the out-of-pocket cap. It could also offer fewer extra benefits, or it could increase your share of the cost for each service or drug. If you want to get a somewhat easier but less comprehensive glance at these Part D and Advantage plans, you can do this if you've already enrolled in Medicare and have received a personal copy of the Medicare and You Handbook in the mail last fall. You can also look at someone else's copy if they live here in this local region, because the book is customized for the New York City metro area and the surrounding counties. That's the city, plus Westchester, the island, that kind of thing. This hard copy version has several plan finders at the back, but you won't be able to see these if you download a PDF version from the net, because that version, the one online, isn't customized for a specific region. The plan finders they give you in this hard copy edition are for Advantage plans, the standalone Part D plans, and two others, special needs and dual eligibles. That's Medicare, Medicaid. They're worth a look. The plans run alphabetically in each category, but be sure you check the left column for each one of them, because that's where you find out whether it's available in Westchester County. We're coming to a section here which is really, really important, and if you never took notes before, this is the time to do it. I always ask people, these are the things you have to consider. There's eight of them when you decide whether you want to go a la carte or complete dinner menu. The first one to start with is coordination of benefits. This is the most important thing because you or your spouse may still be working, or either of you may have a good retiree plan. There's never any harm in signing up for Part A when you turn 65 because there's no premium, and Medicare may be able to pick up some things the employer plan just omits. It's the Part B you want to be careful of, because you don't want to get the double whammy of paying into a retiree plan or an employer plan and also pay the Part B premium. Generally speaking, if your company has more than 20 employees, they won't need you to take Part B. If they have fewer than 20, that's a different story. They want Medicare to pay the primary costs, and they would act as a secondary insurance. But we always tell people, check with HR. See what they want you to do. The only trouble with that is that so many jobs these days don't have any HR department, and you can't check with them. So another way to get around this, because I don't want you to rely totally on what I'm telling you now. Even Medicare tells you this. Don't want you to rely on it. The second choice would be to call the plan itself and see what they have to say. Oh, by the way, you can't get Medicare at all if you're contributing to an HSA. So the advice is to stop contributing to that plan 6 months before you take Part A or Social Security or railroad benefits, because Medicare gives you 6 months of retroactive Part A coverage, and there's some tax penalties if you get this wrong. Retiree plans need you to be in Medicare, Parts A and B. You'll want to coordinate the timing of this, but more on enrollment in another section. Apart from these two employer-related situations, some people have VA coverage, or TRICARE, or federal employees' health benefits, or COBRA. There's quite a few of these types of coverages that operate in conjunction with Medicare, but exist outside the insurance coverage you can get privately. They're explained best on their websites, and they're also mentioned briefly in the Medicare and You book. You'll have to do research on each of these. We don't actually counsel these. Remember, though, COBRA is not creditable coverage as far as Medicare is concerned. which means even though it's an extension of your employer coverage, it doesn't count as current employer coverage or as retiree coverage. You still have to sign up for Medicare at the right time to avoid a penalty. A second consideration after coordination of benefits, which is, I repeat, the most important thing, is costs. And we'll deal with that in one of the later audio chapters. Thirdly, you have to decide how many restrictions you actually can tolerate. The tightest Medicare Advantage plans, HMOs, the PPOs, operate within local networks of providers and facilities. The most restrictive of these, the HMOs, require you to get a referral to a specialist and give you a fair amount of grief with prior authorizations. On the other hand, some of them are free, zero premium. Obviously, they make up their costs through deductibles and copays. Nobody really wins in this game. But if you're healthy, you can sometimes get away cheap for a while and put up with all these restrictions. Let me just say one more thing on the restrictive HMOs. It's not that you need a referral from your primary doctor each time you need to see the specialist. The primary doctor makes the referral once, and it lasts for quite a few months or visits. And usually, you don't go back to this guy at all for this particular issue. You just have to call them to renew that referral when it runs out. Let's talk about prior authorizations for a moment, which is almost a separate category when you're weighing the restrictive nature of some Advantage plans. Some services in these plans require prior approval. For example, hospitalizations, therapies, complicated diagnostic tests, and most often they say for durable medical equipment, skilled nursing facility stays, and Part B drugs. Criteria are developed for the medical necessity of the service and whether the plan will cover that service. These are based on federal and state laws as well as local practices, and approvals can only be given to prevent, evaluate, diagnose, or treat an illness, injury, or disease. They can't be given just for your convenience. They have to be consistent with generally accepted standards of medical practice, peer-reviewed scientific evidence, for example, and they have to be clinically appropriate with regard to type and frequency, duration, and the like. The literature says that prior authorization is a kind of management technique used to help ensure that you're receiving optimal care based on efficacy and safety. For example, to protect you from medications and services interfering with other medications and services, or to ensure that the clinician has the appropriate training to give you that service. Prior authorization is supposed to ensure that support services like counseling are being offered where they're called for, or that care coordination, like care managers, gets triggered at the right time. But they're also used to deter inappropriate procedures and medications. A standard approval request must be handled within 14 days, and an expedited one in 72 hours. Emergency procedures do not need prior approval at all. You just get them. After a doctor submits a request with paperwork, the literature says it's reviewed by one of the plan's staff physicians or nurses, but it can only be denied by a physician. If it is denied, you can certainly appeal it. People mostly don't do this and might lose out. If you're not in an Advantage plan but have original Medicare, you don't need prior authorization. But services like labs and durable medical equipment need a doctor's order instead. Procedures that would require prior authorization in an Advantage plan are, in original Medicare, reviewed for payment after they've been administered, at which time Medicare staff can decide that the service was not medically necessary and actually refuse to pay for it. People have gotten stuck with big bills. Sometimes it's a matter of a billing error, but other times it's not, and they're just out of luck. This can't happen with an Advantage plan because you'll know beforehand that the plan has accepted responsibility for paying the arranged amount to the provider. If you have original Medicare and a Medigap, you can use that combination anywhere in the country for any doctor. That's obviously good for snowbirds, or if you intend to stay with your kids out west for a couple of months each year. On the other hand, all plans, both sides of the chart, cover emergencies. So if you manage your chronic conditions with your local providers, you'll be able to travel quite a lot. Many people mention that they really want to keep the doctors they have. They don't want to start seeing someone else. So be sure to call them up to find out which Advantage plans they take, if any, or maybe find out from the plan if your specific doctors are actually in it. I don't trust the plans a whole lot on this. Best call the doctors themselves. There's too many mistakes in registering or re-registering themselves at the end of the year. They're not always up to date. When the CareMount Group dropped the Emblem Health Plans in 2021, it caused all kinds of chaos trying to figure out which providers were in this plan and which were out. And it's the same with hospitals. Call them to find out whether they take your plan. A couple of years ago, for example, Montefiore stopped accepting UnitedHealthcare's Advantage plans. That affected people down county a lot more than people in the north who use other hospitals. The fourth item to consider is drugs. All Medicare drug plans have to cover at least two drugs per category, but it's the plans themselves that choose which drugs in that category they'll be offering, so you've got to make sure that what you need is on their formulary. The fifth one is extra benefits. That's like a small amount of hearing, vision, dental help, acupuncture, silver sneakers. These plans are trying to get your business, and they offer things that people want. Silver Sneakers is a fitness program, and you get a pass to the local gym. That's a good thing. Medicare will cover dental services related to serious surgeries or cancer. But do be careful, though, because some of the things they say they're offering are really only for people that are severely ill. There's very strict conditions on these things. Transportation, meal delivery, adult daycare, a lot of goodies, and many of them we'll all be likely to need at some point, but we won't necessarily be able to get them when the time comes. The plan is just not going to give them to you right off the bat. Only a few more of these. Number six would be travel. Some plans, both sides of the chart, give you extra coverage when you travel outside the United States, because Medicare doesn't go outside the United States. For number seven, we have out-of-pocket limits. HMOs can't make you pay more than $9,350 in 2025 for in-network medical services. And that doesn't include medications, by the way. But plans can make that cap lower if they want to. For PPOs, where there's more flexibility to go out of network, the in- and out-of-pocket max combined in 2025 is $14,000. Medigaps, on the other hand, don't have any of these out-of-pocket maximums, but if you have a comprehensive kind of Medigap, you wouldn't need them. And the last item I want to mention is changeability. People get to change their plans each year during fall enrollment, which is October 15th to December 7th. But in New York State, you're allowed to change a Medigap any time. You don't have to wait till fall enrollment. Don't worry about moving out of state, though, because if you have a Medigap, you can take it with you, though the premium may change when it's priced by the other state. Saying that, if you don't have a Medigap when you move and you want to buy one in the new state, you may be subject to medical underwriting. Only New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Maine have continuous Medigap enrollment protections. But in other states, you're most likely outside your guaranteed issue period. That's the set number of months that you can't be asked about your health history and can't be denied Medigap coverage at all. Companies then have a right to ask you a whole bunch of questions to figure out your health status. And here's where things like smoking and alcohol consumption, hospital stays, specific diseases, and many other factors come into play. You should explore this whole situation when you're making a big move to a different state. This doesn't apply for Massachusetts, Minnesota, or Wisconsin, which have their own Medigap structures. If you have a Part D plan or a Medicare Advantage plan, you'll get a special enrollment to make any changes you need to based on the change of your residence. If you live in more than one state, give Medicare your permanent address, which is where you file your taxes or you vote, and make sure your Part D plan works in both states. You must be exhausted by now because I am, so let's take a break and I'll go into costs in the next chapter.